Over the years, and by the years I mean the thousands of years, from time to time, in fact, time and time again, people have had to come out and stand up for justice and righteousness. It seems, unfortunately, that justice and righteousness don't just ooze out of our public situations. They don't just come because. Sometimes when there is injustice, those who are suffering the injustice have to name it, and they have to cry out, and they have to resist the injustice. Sometimes when there is injustice, those who are benefiting from the injustice don't recognize it, don't realize it, and haven't internalized the dissonance of using the language of justice while benefiting from receiving the fruits of injustice. During those times when injustice is recognized and people cry out for justice and proclaim God's righteousness, they use their voices and their feet and their hands as they enter into society and make claims. Sometimes there are rallying cries. I can think of some rallying cries that happened in the midst of the civil rights movement that happened and was continuing to happen just as I was coming onto the scene as an infant. And I can think of the cries that I've heard in movements for justice here in this place and in this time. One of those that I can remember as we celebrate this day and remember not only the hope for the one who is to come, the one whose advent we celebrate at Christmas time, but the shalom, the peace that that brings is no justice, no peace. Time and time again, I've been in streets where I've heard no justice, no peace. The first time I saw no justice, no peace was on a bumper sticker. And the bumper sticker said, no justice, no peace. And beneath it, it said, "Kano justice, Kano peace." Without justice, there can't be peace for everyone. And if we know, recognize, internalize justice, we will know, recognize, internalize peace. I think that justice and peace go together so necessarily that that's why here in Jeremiah, when we hear words of righteousness, they are automatically paired with words of justice. Jeremiah promises that one will come who will execute justice and righteousness in the land. You can't have one without the other. When God's righteousness arrives in the land and is recognized and experienced by the people of that land, justice follows automatically. Why is that? It's because God is a righteous God of all of creation. And if some portion of creation, some portion of humanity is excluded from the fruits of God's creation, then God's righteousness is not fully recognized and indeed not fully being received. Sometimes that's hard to remember and it's hard to think about because righteousness and justice seem to be some of those things that if when I get mine, I'm okay. If I feel like I've received justice, that goes a long way to placating me. But sometimes when I receive what feels like justice for me, someone else is not receiving what is necessary justice for them. And here's the thing about that. One is, I may never know if I continue to be in my own little bubble and not listening to the voices of my brothers and sisters, and I may never even have a chance to hear those voices if I insulate myself from them. But the other thing is this, a little justice for me may mean a lot of injustice for you. Here's an example. I think most people would agree that if you run a stop sign and you don't kill anybody, that you've broken a law, but that you probably shouldn't have your life upset for the next 10 years for having done that thing. I believe that that's true. If you run a stop sign and you haven't harmed anyone, you have still broken a law. We have stop signs for reasons. But that running a stop sign and not harming anybody probably shouldn't affect my life for the next 10 years. That's why I think to myself, okay, well, I don't know what it is in my community, but I'm sure it's 50 or 100 or 150 bucks if you get caught running a stop line and you don't hurt somebody, right? Stop sign. And that was going to annoy me, and it's going to get me in trouble at home. I'm going to be embarrassed in front of my congregation, but I'm going to pay the 50 or 100 or 150 bucks, and then I'm not going to go out for pizza, or I'm not going to order a big textbook, or whatever it is I'm not going to do for the next month. Maybe I'll feel that justice has been served. But that's because I have a full-time and a part-time job, and I have a working spouse. What if I run that same stop sign and I don't hurt anybody and the fine is 30% of my income for the month? And what if when I can't pay that fine because it's a choice between paying that fine and paying for my medicine, I get sent to jail? And what if while I'm in jail, I'm told that I have to pay the cost of my incarceration, and not until I pay the fine and pay the cost of my incarceration and pay court fees will I be let out of jail? And what then if I'm told that when I do get out of jail, if I do and I haven't paid all of the fines that I need to pay, there might be a warrant out for my arrest that will stop me from enjoying all of the rights that I thought I had in our society? And what if I get caught sometime because there's that warrant from that stop sign and all of a sudden now I'm in more trouble? And now it piles up and piles on. And I can't be with my family and I can't pay my bills and I end up in jail again. And pretty soon that becomes my life. That's a completely different picture, isn't it? Admittedly, for me, $50 or $100 or $150 is something I can absorb. I don't want to absorb. I should always stop at stop signs because that's how we keep people safe. But I could absorb that fine. But in some communities, there are some people who could not absorb that fine. And in other communities, there are some fines that are so high that they are intended to harm and do injustice to those people. That's just one little example. Every time you roll up to a stop sign, please realize that what seems like a simple instance of justice at work, there may be injustice lurking just behind that sign. That's frightening to me as one who proclaims on this first Sunday in Advent the very God who promised us an enactment of God's righteousness and justice throughout the land. That means that there are some things that I take for granted, like stop signs, for goodness sake, that aren't completely just in the way that a righteous God would have them be so. And the list goes on. From stop signs to other laws on our books, to our housing practices, to any number of other issues. And so the question is, what in the world can I do if I want to be a person of peace, worshiping a God of righteousness in a world of justice? What can I do? Maybe lighting a candle will help. Maybe erecting a Christmas tree will change it. Only if the lighting of this candle and the decorating of these trees helps us to know justice so that we can know peace and enables us then to stand up and proclaim and enact that where there is no justice, there cannot, for all God's people, be peace. Peace is kind of an internal thing sometimes for some of us, right? Leave me be. Let me be at peace. I want to feel peace inside. This forest glade is so peaceful. And I'm not mocking that at all. I dig that kind of peace. As an introvert, I long for that kind of peace. Nothing makes me happier than a chirping bird and a light breeze and a good book. But peace is also relational, isn't it? I can't have full shalom if I'm just alone with my book and my butterfly and my breeze. Peace is relational. Shalom, comprehensive well-being. My peace and your peace are connected, and our peace is connected to the peace of others. Maybe others we've not yet met. Maybe others that we distrust. Maybe others we haven't seen. Maybe others who are excluded from the places we go and the things that we see. But in order to know justice and then know peace, we must long for, work for, fight for a world where there is no injustice, so that others can experience peace. Well, where's Jesus come into all of that? Jesus' life and ministry were an expression of God's longing for shalom for all of creation and its enactment in a place and among a people. So the stuff Jesus did helped us to know the person that Jesus was. Jesus was the Christ, the anointed one. And we know that through what he did. When Jesus saw injustice and challenged it or corrected it or stood up against it, he was expressing his divinity. He was expressing what it means to be not just a child of God, but the one whom we would call the Son of God. In essence, saying, God doesn't play that way when someone was oppressing someone else. In essence, saying, you are part of the human family when someone felt excluded. In essence, saying, what God is matters to who we are. So today is the beginning of Advent, that liturgical season when we prepare for the coming of Christ at Christmas time. I like Christmas. I like it a lot. I like babies. Does anybody in here like babies? Anybody like? Now, the next phase for me, hopefully in the next 5 to 10 years, is to like babies as a grandfather, right? Which means to like them when their diaper is clean, and like them when they have been fed, and like them when they're not crying, to like them kind of at a distance, and love them up close. But the thing about babies is, they're little balls of unexpected trouble. Right? I love babies. But the thing is, they grow up. They need stuff. They want stuff. They need, like, really difficult stuff. Like, they want to be fed when they're hungry. They want to be protected when they're in danger. They want to be clothed when they are cold. They want to be loved from the moment they're born. You can't just light a candle and say, now I've cared for the baby. Can you? probably Child Protective Services will come to your house and say something about that. Well, I don't know what happened, social worker. I lit the candle, the baby candle. This baby that we're preparing for, this Jesus who grows up and teaches and leads and loves, he's a troublemaker. He's a troublemaker. From the day that he's born, people are out to get him. You know, from the day that Jesus was born, there was trouble, we're told. In the book of Matthew, we're told that there's trouble and that Herod wants to get rid of all the babies to make sure that he gets the one baby that might upset the apple cart. And immediately, his family becomes a refugee family. They don't want to leave. Right? They want to hang out in Nazareth. Maybe they'd even stay in Bethlehem with their extended family. They don't want to leave. They're Jews from Judea and Galilee. But from day one, the world's out to get them. Joseph and Mary, because of this baby, become refugees. And they run for it. They run for Egypt. They've got to cross a border. They've got to get to safety. And the Bible tells us they were able to get there and they were able to be safe. They had this baby. They had to take care. They couldn't just light a candle and everything's okay. The baby had needs. They hung out in Egypt for a while. They had refugee status. They were cared for. And then they came back. And it all started. And Jesus becomes a preteen. Who likes preteens? I see some preteens out there. Love them. But you're a big ball of messy needs too, aren't you, preteens? You want stuff. You're thinking stuff. You got great ideas. You're growing. You're challenging things. And Jesus shows up in the temple and he's talking theology. He's talking smack with people like me. Oh, those preteens and their theological ideas. And then he grows. And he gets out into the world and he sees that people are being abused because of who they are. People are being confused about who God is. And people are being refused at tables. And he acts to change that. Because God promised justice, an enactment of God's righteousness. And Jesus, when people are being abused, when people are being confused, when people are being refused and accused, he opens his arms, speaks words of love, and welcomes them in. So here's what I'm going to suggest. As you're thinking about Christmas gifts this year, please realize that the most important Christmas gifts have already been given. Christ has come among us, expressed God's presence to us. And as Jeremiah said all those thousands of years ago, God's justice and righteousness become the gifts of Christmas. We don't have to wait until December 25th to open them. We're invited to experience them and to use them. When you see injustice, know that a righteous God is being denied in that place, in that moment. When you practice justice, know that a righteous God is being affirmed in that place, in that moment. And I want to mention just one last thing, and that is sometimes justice is hard to recognize because we confuse it with law. There's a lot of law and justice conversation in the Bible, but I thought I would read just for a little bit from Henry David Thoreau's Civil Disobedience. If you read it with the Bible in mind, civil disobedience seems to be about justice. If you read it with just current day politics in mind, it seems that Henry David Thoreau was the biggest and baddest libertarian of all. But I think those things touch on one another in some ways. Thoreau, writing in the 19th century, had something to say about slavery and saw that even though some things were legal, they weren't necessarily just. And so wrote things like this: "I cannot for an instant recognize that political organization as my government, which is also the slave's government. You can't govern me if at the same time you're governing me, you're enslaving people," Thoreau says. "I can't buy that. It's legal, I know, I've seen the laws, but it ain't right." My guess is I'll never find "it ain't right" in any of Thoreau's writings. That's the Jeff Moore 21st century paraphrase. But when the friction comes to have its machine, he's talking about social friction, he's talking about the difference between law and true justice. When the friction comes to have its machine and oppression and robbery are organized, as was the case in slavery, as is the case in the laws, even about stop signs that I mentioned earlier, I say, let us not have such a machine any longer. In other words, when a sixth of the population of a nation which has undertaken to be the refuge of liberty are slaves, and a whole country is unjustly overrun and conquered by a foreign army and subjected to military law, I think it's not too soon for honest men and women and children to rebel and revolutionize. If something bad's happening around us, we've got to stand up and say something. We've lit the candle. We've named what's important to us. Now, along with so many others lighting so many candles here at the beginning of December, we have to ask, having lit the candle, having acknowledged the light, how will we live? Let that candle, that single flame, warm your heart so that you long for God's righteousness and that you enact God's justice. At the borders of your nation, at the borders of your neighborhood, and at the borders of your own relationships, how will we welcome, acknowledge, and love others so that we not only receive, but that we open and engage the true gifts of Christmas, God's righteousness, and human global justice? Amen.